Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the USTDI Task Force. Quick roll call. I know we have our co-chairs, Christina Caraballo and Terry O'Malley. We also have Tina Estevito and Steve Reedy. Are there any other task force members that are on the line? Okay. I see a few that are dialing into the Adobe, so maybe they'll be joining us shortly. So with that, I will turn it over to Christina and Terry for a few opening remarks before we dive into the discussion of the recommendations.
Okay. So, Christina, do you want me to start?
Go for it. Thanks, Terry.
Okay. All right, gang. Welcome back. We had a really good high-tech meeting last week with a lot of really important and thoughtful feedback. And so our job today, we have several jobs, but our main job today is to go through that feedback and edit our slides, because the slides are going to be the basis of the transmittal letter, which we have to get approved at our next phone call. So we're on a little bit of a tight timeline. So the plan is today to go through the comments and then what we said, and then edit that. And hopefully we'll get through all five sections. There are a couple of interesting issues that came up as a result of the high tech, but we can discuss those. So without further ado, shall we head off into the slides? And Johnny, you going to share your deck?
Yep. So I shared. Is everybody able to see the screen?
Yes.
Yep. We see you. Yeah.
Looks great.
Okay, great.
All right. So the way the slide deck is arranged is we've got those five sections, the demographics, the provenance, clinical notes, pediatric vital signs, and other. And we've pulled the high-tech, pulled into each section sort of the questions we had for the high-tech, their comments, and then what we said, and that will be our chance to edit. Before we go any further, any questions or concerns or comments?
No, all good.
All good. Okay. Then we'll take it through. So here's what we asked the high tech. Now, were there any other use cases besides these three? And we actually didn't get a lot of feedback from them on our particular questions, although we did get some feedback. So basically, Andrew and Clem and Arian commented, and I think that you know, by and large, Andrew's comment on the role of patient care, we decided we'd put in our other category since it has to do with team members. So we'll pick that up when we get to our last other. And Clem's comment on NPI actually fits well when we get into provenance, although he was also an advocate of cell phones. Andrew was more of an advocate. And Arian's comments were moving over to pediatric vital signs. So the next slide, please. Thank you for your rapid-fire edits here, Johnny. Much appreciated. So we didn't really get a lot of comments on the initial sort of address, and I think that can pretty well stay the way it is unless people have, again, anyone with a comment or a concern, just speak up. Don't worry about putting your hand up and having us see you. Break in, say whatever you want. But both of those, the phone number and the address were pretty much unscathed Next slide, please, Johnny. Okay. The only feedback we got on the ad preferred email address was from Steve Posnack, who wasn't quite sure that this was really an address, but we're going to float it out there anyway. No one else in the high tech made any comments about it. So the next section under other was where most of the comments came, and they really came, one is sort of the optional identifiers, and the first one was in pediatric demographics. And so for pediatric demographics, there's an issue that Stephen Lane raised. And Stephen, are you on the phone? I think I saw an email that he was going to miss this. But Stephen raised a really interesting point, just saying, you know, is there a more general use case than just pediatric demographics? The constant seems to be any individual who does not have the capacity to consent, either for treatment or use of information. And that's particularly true in pediatrics, and it's really complex because you've got different ages of majority, you've got different degrees of competency, and then you've got the issue of emancipation. So if you're married at the age of 13, you're an emancipated minor and free to make your own decisions. So it gets a little complicated, but the flip side of that happens at the other end of life, where you've got individuals who no longer have capacity, usually because of dementia, and they need sort of the same thing in their demographics. They need an indication of who's got consent authority and how do you get in touch with them. So let me throw that out to the task force and just get some thoughts on whether we want to broaden this sort of pediatric demographics to include really anyone who does not have consent authority.
Carrie, this is Tina. I think that's an excellent point. I guess I wonder if it would be worth maybe commenting for further clarity on what the intent is, sort of kind of the bigger picture, because I agree that would fall under demographic, but I think we're also we're making some assumptions here, and perhaps part of the comment would be that if the intent is to provide clarity around the items that you just identified, then that needs to be clarified and ensure that that's incorporated as part of the ultimate, you know, solution or final rule, if you will.
Great. Thank you. By all means. So we'll drop some context around that. And I heard someone else.
Yeah, this is Steve Reedy. I was just going to say it would make sense to as much as possible if we can broaden that section to expand beyond the pediatric piece. I would agree.
Great. Okay. Anyone else? That was easy. Okay. Great. So we'll craft some context around that and make it less pediatric. Okay. So the next comment was actually from Andrew Truscott around some clarity around what you mean by a vetted ID. And Adam had a great phrase for it. It says, a vetted ID is issued by a state or national authority, such as state driver's license, and that whole list of things there. So among the non-vetted, so your last four digits of your social are sort of a vetted ID, since you get it when you're born. The direct address is not a vetted ID. So maybe anyone have any strong feelings about it and keeping a direct address or putting it under a different heading?
Well, this is Clem. I think that having a way, and I think I've talked about it before, some address by which an organization could push the data to that individual's preferred site would be very, very advantageous. And a direct address is one example. Email address is another, which would also require a field, let's say I give permission, because that's allowed already. And there may be others, but I think we really need a way to deliver the detail to the patient by push rather than having them chase around and try to figure out how to get to it.
Yeah, that's a great point. So direct address is just one of several means for pushing data to the patient, and others might include their email. They might have a PHR address.
I'm wondering if we don't move the direct address up with the email address.
With the email address? Or the email address down with the direct address?
Yeah, bundle them.
But this is a little different. It's not just giving the email address. It's saying send it to this place. And the email, you probably need to have an additional field that says, I authorize my provider to do so, because in many contexts, people are nervous about email addresses because they do present some risk for being snooped on.
Yeah, unless it's sort of a secure, an issue.
Yeah, well, direct actually adds security. That's what it all does, but it's another burden, the barrier. But currently, according to the meeting last week from Steve Posnack, currently providers are supposed to allow the discussion or delivery by email if the patient requests it. So we need an additional field or something that says they requested it, so that those patients who are real nervous about having their hemoglobin go through email would not specify.
So, Clem, I think that's an excellent point. But just keeping us focused on the data elements, I mean, I definitely agree that, like, preferred communication method is important, but looking at the specific data elements for our purpose, I think it's
Wasn't email already on? I thought it was.
It was. Yeah. We were looking at putting them kind of in the same category.
Okay.
You know, your phrase of a preferred communication method, you know, maybe that's another line that needs to be in demographics. And it can be a drop down.
Yeah.
Focus on preferred push delivery method.
Okay.
I mean, there's a difference between a number that you'd call the patient to remind about an appointment and the clinical data.
Yeah.
Excellent point.
Okay. So more verbiage around that, but that's great. That's excellent. And then no one really had any comments about homelessness and weighting those standards and gender identity. So I think we'll leave those on, recognizing they're going to be a sort of a second stage set.
Well, I think that's fine, but I think also realize that homeless, it's hard to have. I mean, there's an intrinsic tough problem. Gender and identity, actually, I think stuff is being proposed and cooking for a set of questions and answers about that. In some domain, it'll be coming our way.
Yeah, and actually, I think Sequoia is working on homelessness. It's according to Stephen.
Good. Okay.
All right, so they've got to figure out, and it's not just homelessness in general, but people who are displaced by natural disasters, you know, a whole bunch of people. So I think our saying, we'll make it clear that we're saying as a second, in a second tier, as soon as standards are ready, we would like to bring these forward. Okay? So if we get to the next page is sort of our set of recommendations. And I think we'll rewrite this to reflect the comments that we just had and really tighten this up to really make it a bulleted set of recommendations. So it won't be a discussion of recommendations, it will be recommendations. And if we need to put...
So the last four Social Security was on the last previous page, right? And that's
right.
Still in play.
Yep. And again, you know, for the use case of patient matching, these are the vetted IDs are really voluntary. They're not going to be required, but you would think a system should be able to capture it if it's available. Okay. All right. Patient demographics. It's a wrap. So what we're going to do is we'll write this all up, and we're going to put it in the two formats. One is the slide deck that we're going to show on the 25th, and the other is in the transmittal letter. And we'll get the transmittal letter out to everyone as quickly as we can, so you'll have a chance to look at it so we can vote on it as a task force next Monday. So that's the plan. So we'll recraft the stuff. We won't add anything new. We'll just try to clean up the language a bit. Okay. Moving right along. Provenance. Okay. So we actually got a fair amount of comments on provenance. And I think generally it was very supportive. So let's go to the comments. Next slide, Johnny. Okay. So Stephen's comment was to clarify the issue around author, organization, entity, agent. And his recommendation really was start at the very highest level where there's some clarity, and that is to just ask for the organization that generated the particular data element in question. Recognizing that if it's a big organization, they may have many, many, many layers underneath it. But what we want to know in provenance is that this data element came from a reputable source. We can find that source, and that source can find the data element and give us its provenance, its history within their system. So that was what I took as Stephen's comment in it, and it was in response to Sasha Termott's comment that it's really hard to sort out agent, entity, author. And Stephen's point was, don't go to that level. Keep it at a really, really high level as the first cut. And a second pass at provenance, you will have some experience about knowing how valuable further granularity would be. So that's what I took from Stephen's comment. So let me toss that back to the group and for
so
thoughts.
This is Steve Reed. I wasn't able to attend the meeting, but I had a question around these two data elements between organization versus author. Was there any discussion around legal liability in like from an information discovery perspective during a lawsuit or anything like that of what's mandatory to be there or what an organization must be held liable and must produce, say, provenance for, you know, an organization that sent the data? Was there any discussion around that?
Not that I recall.
Okay, thanks.
Should we? No, we're the task force. We can do whatever we want.
I didn't know if some legal considerations needed to be discussed, you know, from an attorney perspective of what's going to be required to be discoverable if clinical decisions are being made in an incorrect, if something happens, if harm is, you know, occurred, if they're going to want, you know, to discover, you know, the author, say, of something that was some bit of a discrete element that was shared.
Yeah, I hear your point. And I think, you know, at some time in the future, we might get down to that level of granularity. But I think that Stephen's point was, let's start it as simply as we can in a way that is effective and gives us the trust we need that the data element is there and gives us the ability to find it if we need to.
Okay. Sounds good. All right.
So let me propose to you guys is that I think what we're proposing to do, so if we go to the next page, Johnny. Yeah. So what we're really proposing is the organization and the timestamp without the author and without the agent or entity. I think agent entity just confused things a bit. So what we would say is, yeah, no author. We would have, instead of the author's timestamp, we would have the organization's timestamp. That's the source organization.
Makes sense.
Well, just a clarification. The timestamp is related to what?
The creation of the data element.
Well, I think you have to go further because there's a date that it's created. You know, something, say in a lab, something could be produced and something else happens and it doesn't get released until it's finalized. Or there's some other, we should investigate what's the precise one that's most relevant.
Okay.
Because an instrument might pick it out, but it doesn't count as real until a technologist reviews it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think its release date is what's used in HL7.
So let's just put that in because that makes perfect sense.
Okay.
It's going to be an identifier that the organization knows. I mean, they're going to know the release date.
Yeah.
And you know they can track it back using that. So yeah. So timestamp really means the release date.
To be precise, it means the release date and time.
Yeah.
That's what.
Great. And the organization is the organization within which that data element was generated.
Correct.
Which then carries on to some of the other discussion we had about unique identification and a versioning identification. So we can get to that next, but I think this I think is in my mind a bit clearer.
I would agree. I completely agree. I think at the end of the day, if we take the meaning of provenance in terms of what's intended to do, it's just to tell you the source. I think maybe we're trying to go down a little bit too deep, and starting at this level. It tells the user, whoever that may be, here's where this is from, and if we incorporate some sort of timestamp, date, whatever, I feel that's a fair first step.
Yeah. Okay. Now that's great. So, and then Clem, to your point, Ned, do we want to put in sort of the organization as indicated by NPI, or is that getting too specific? Clem, if you're answering, you're on mute. Oops. Well, maybe we've lost Clem. So sort of the rest of the group, what do you think about using NPI as the organization tag? Whoops, Clem is disconnected. Okay.
So this is Cheryl. That works for provider organizations, but what if they're other than that?
According to Clem, NPI is for anyone who bills Medicare or Medicaid has got to have an NPI number.
Right, but what if you're exchanging data with a payer? To my knowledge, we don't have an NPI number.
Yeah, that seems to be attached to the provider, not the organization.
Okay.
Right. That's the only reason why. I mean, to me, the standard of what should go in there is somebody else to figure out. I think for us, it's to figure out what the data elements should be. And then, yes, for provider organizations, I think NPI is the right one. For us, maybe it's our, you know, corporate number, because we do have those as well. I mean, I don't know the right thing, but I think that's for the standards organization to figure out, right?
Excellent.
Yeah, and Terry, I think the NPI is going to be more in our optional recommendations under the provider demographic.
Okay. Makes sense. And Dr. McClure made a comment, but I can't see it right now. Flashed on the screen for a second. All right. Johnny, do you want to take us to the next one?
So Dr. McClure said an NPI can either be a person or an organization. There are two different types of NPI that look similar.
Okay.
Correct.
Good to know. Okay. So under our additional recommendations, we're scrapping all of this. all of the top part. Oops, don't take everything. I'm sorry. Except for author. Right. All right, so we're not going to get more granular. We're going to stay very high level. So that one goes. But there was universal appreciation of a unique and persistent either identity or identifier, and I'm not quite sure I understand the difference between the two. But if somebody else does, I'm happy to.
I think if we just talk about an organization, I think it's an identifier.
Okay. Yeah, I can't. It's made that comment. Yeah, I can't. Okay. All right. So we're okay with identifier?
Yeah.
Okay. All righty. So, great. And how about if instead of instance or observation, we just use data element, which is what ONC is used all the way through? Whoops, you're real fast, Johnny. I don't know if we've agreed to that yet. Maybe?
Well, I think the use of the word data element is really a messy term, because in database parlance, it means the individual field like the date of an observation or the units of measure, it doesn't mean the whole thing. And the things we're talking about are mostly chunks, like a prescription or an observation. I don't know if there's a good word for it.
Yeah, but the way ONC has been using it, you know, so they're not using it in a database terminology. They're using it sort of from a user perspective, I think.
But it's very confusing as a result. I mean, maybe we should talk with them.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any substitute?
Well, data item might be more generic. That's what they call the parts of a survey instrument, typically, you know, the individual questions.
Guys, this is something we went back and forth on in our first round of recommendations. Think if we have time, we should come back to it at the end. But I'd just say let's align with the ONC definitions for the purposes of getting through our recommendations today. And when we move on to the expansion process, we can continue to highlight definitions as a issue.
Well, have they defined it in their material?
They have. I think data class, data objects, and data elements were defined.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, thanks, Christina. Okay, Johnny, how about the next one? What are we doing? Oh, I see you're pulling up the...
Oh, we prepared data objects. Data class and data elements have been defined.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. So back to our recommendations. We're going to stay focused here.
Right. So let's just replace everything with data class and data element, more appropriate, whichever. And we're getting rid of agent and entity. Getting rid of author.
Okay. I guess CMR all these things, data elements.
Okay. All right. And then we had a discussion of the recommendations. And here's where, again, we're going to mark things up a little bit. And again, Clem, I think it was your point. So we said, let's start with the who and when. So again, we'll clean this up to be organization and release time.
Yeah, because most of these data elements, if we go with that, have that kind of state of what inside of them.
Yeah, but, you know, don't you think would the what be useful in provenance? I mean,
I don't know. I don't. Because what's the point if they come as pairs? The provenance applies to what we're calling data element. And let's say if you take an observation, there's already a variable called category. There's a variable called the observation identifier. The observation identifier points to a dictionary, which says even more things about it. And I think it only adds confusion if people have to say pizza, pizza. And often they say it two different ways, and it creates even more confusion.
Okay. So you're saying forget about the what. It's already part of the data coming. The data that's coming to you is already flagged by the what.
Correct.
All right. So, you know, we may want to say that.
All right. Because
so let's
the province is a thing that says something about the data element. It's not standalone.
All right. But let's make the point though that they're going to know what the what is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Even though it will come as part of provenance, it'll come as part of the data package, or whatever.
Right.
Okay. And you know, a lot of the stuff on here, I'm not sure we need to include like that one. Yeah, it's, you know, because it's, again, we're going to rewrite the second bullet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make sure that that whole idea is included. And it's, and I'm not sure we have to tell them that subsequent versions can be expanded because they will be. And then we just cite, and we're just citing a use case. Perhaps that's important to cite, but it's, you know, it's not, I don't know.
Well, I think some people don't realize that that could even be the most important way, because there is so much duplication in these electronic flows.
Yep.
To know which one to pay attention to.
Okay. All right. So we'll figure out where to put that one. If it requires a new metadata field, do we need to point that out?
I'm sorry?
So the next line where it says unique identifier may require a new metadata field?
Well, it could. Well, let me rephrase that. If one depended on something that's already there, you want the first one to be in its own field. But, you know, actually, it's a little premature. I'm going to be we need to talk with some of the fire experts to get clarity on the best way to do this. And I actually have a call scheduled tonight. I didn't have it soon enough to help this call to get clarity on what's cooking or could be there. It gets pretty deep when you look at it.
So should we just defer to HL7 to say they'll figure out the metadata?
Yeah.
All right. We'll do that. So we won't care. And the last paragraph is where we can put a little piece about organizations and kind of what we mean by an organization. And what we, and perhaps what we mean by the release time or the timestamp.
Yeah.
Put them in there. Okay. Great. Got too much paper on my desk. Here we go. All right. Moving right along. Clinical notes. This is great. We're rolling. Okay. So this is an interesting discussion, I thought. So hit the next slide, Johnny, because there is a wide range of opinion. You know, including Stephen saying, as the rest of us did, it makes sense. They're note types in the consolidated CDA. And Steve Posnack says, yeah, but the market hasn't implemented most of them, and if the secret were to be known, the reason the market didn't implement them was not that it didn't necessarily have value. It's because the CCD allowed you to check all the meaningful use boxes and get paid. So that CCD had more value, but it doesn't necessarily mean the other node types don't have value. At least that's how I read this.
Well, you know, I'm not sure what the exact points were, but most of these notes, not all of them, exist in a dictation system today or in a computer system today. And the challenge may be making sure they're labeled as such. I don't know what the whole range, what's already specified in CCDA is likely also be in a computer system somewhere. Now, we did add some that may not be widely used. I don't know if that was Posnack's point.
We transfer summary is not widely used because there's discharge summary in CCD.
Mm-hmm.
And so But, you know, on the other hand, the transfer summary has a lot of clinical value. So the note types weren't chosen for their clinical value. They were chosen for their meaningful use value, which is different.
Well, I think they were actually chosen for what kind of existed then. You know, everybody does an operative note, everybody does a discharge summary.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe we just put it out there and see what happens. I don't know whether we have to be too precise about what
I'm sorry, I think I interrupted.
Well, I'm supportive of the list we put in. That
yeah.
It's not going to break. I mean, maybe industry won't adopt them, but...
How about a recommendation that if you generate any of these things, so if you generate operative notes, if you have discharges, if you, you know, send out lab value narratives and pathology, that you adopt these note types. If you don't,
they'll use that as an excuse to not structure anything. But, yeah, that may be a reasonable compromise.
And just say, you know, if you make it, if you do this stuff, then send it this way. If you don't, then don't worry about it because you're not going to need to do it. And on the other hand, if you're a receiver, you've got to be able to receive all of these documents. That's a different thing. You've got to be able to receive them, parse them, put them into your system, retrieve them, send them back again. So the onus is really on the receivers.
Well, just to clarify, though, the Joint Commission requires some of them, and they'll never go away. They'll always be there.
Right.
Operative notes and discharge summaries.
Yeah. So do you think it's a reasonable compromise to say if you generate these types of notes and send them? You know, then
Terry, I don't know if you're using the hand raising feature. This is Stephen.
No,
sorry,
Stephen.
I joined late because they scheduled a bunch of patients on top of this meeting. So I apologize for that.
Thank you.
But I think your compromise makes sense. I mean, I do think that we want to encourage systems to label notes by the standard set of note types. You know, whether we don't have to require the use of things that the market has not, you know, proven valuable. But, you know, if people, it's a shame if everything gets labeled as a miscellaneous note, because only by labeling them can the receiving system really try to do something intelligent with them in terms of where they file them and whom they send them to and how they expose them, et cetera. So I think having a list of core note types that are somehow required and others that are optional, but if you have them, you should send them and everyone should be able to eventually receive them and make use of them. I think that makes sense.
I think your point about the miscellaneous notes being not very helpful because you don't know what it is a really good one.
So that makes specifying and using these note types, to your point, Stephen, it makes it even more valuable. Because, as I think Arian suggested, you needed an unstructured note. That'll be a miscellaneous note, I'm sure. And we need that.
But yeah, and unstructured and miscellaneous are a little different. You know, unstructured is you can just throw different kinds of content in there, whereas miscellaneous, I'm sort of thinking about, you know, well, you know, is it an op note? Is it a discharge? Is it a consult? Is it a, you know, et cetera. But, yeah, I think probably both of those are going to be needed.
An unstructured and a miscellaneous?
Well, no. Unstructured, all the narrative notes are unstructured by definition in the description from the USCBI. It's just talking about labeling them clearly. And I wouldn't argue that you must have a miscellaneous note. I just, because it may encourage everybody to use that as the only note type.
Yeah.
Well, you just want to make sure that the notes can move, that any note can move from a source system to a receiving system. And I would leave it up, you know, I'd leave it up to others, you know, to say whether that means you need a miscellaneous note type or not. But what we don't want is to be able to only, ship or access a subset of the notes, because then that creates patient safety concerns.
Yeah. Well, but so we're going to say then we want all of these. If you're creating a note that conforms to one of these HL7 note types, then send it as that type of note. Right?
Label it and send it.
Label it and send it.
Good
that
point.
Type. And if you don't do that stuff, then don't worry about it because you don't have to do it.
Well, you'd be better off not telling them what they don't need to do.
Yeah, good point. Right. We'll just say what you have to do. Okay, that's good. Point taken. All right.
Terry, I don't know whether you've had a chance to sort of acknowledge the great stuff that's being put in the public chat and comments, but I see we've got some real subject matter experts who've shown up for the call, and they're providing input. I do want to encourage those of you who are here from the public that please plan to speak up when public comment time comes, because it's very frustrating when we don't have a chance to hear from people directly.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. Yes, and please be prepared early and often. Okay. Okay. You know, and then Clem, you made the point of if we get enough people doing this, then we'll hit a tipping point. So I think agree. So we have the next slide, Charlie. Where are we at? All right. So, and again, I don't think we got any pushback on this, nor did we get any clarification that I can recall about operative notes. So I think this can pretty well stay. Next one, Johnny. Okay. So here's where we made our recommendations and our additions. So to add the following clinical note types, that all that did was to complete the CCDA list. And the following the last three I think I don't know if the standards already exist for the first two, the med list and the advanced care planning. And standards will exist shortly for the long-term support note. So again, any further comment on those? Or we'll probably keep this pretty much as it is.
Yeah, I'd like to second Steve. I just hadn't been looking at public comments. There are some very good ones in there. I just read through them. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, and thank you, all the folks making the comments. Okay, so let's go ahead to the next one. Where are we at? Okay, so this is our discussion of recommendations.
Terry, I forget where do you have the recommendation regarding the standard quality metric query response? Was that here, or did you already cover that?
Well, we put it in other because I didn't know how to put it into here. We'll eventually. We didn't get to it in the high tech because I forgot we had one more slide. But,
oops. if I'm still on the call when we get to there, I'm going to have some comments just because it's come up in a regional discussion here in California. So we can come back to it.
Okay. All right. Rita, I'm reading Rita's comments in the public chat. Thank you. Please feel free to email us, whatever you'd like. Thank you. So on our discussion here, so we basically concluded that we want all the notes. If you have the data, then you send it in a note and label it as such. We can cut out a lot of the stuff about, you know, the transfer summary notes better than the discharge summary. But the next paragraph, the new note types, I think is an important concept to advance, and that is just can't be hospital ambulatory practice centric. Right? The healthcare system is much broader. And we have to begin to recognize the needs of the other service providers as they go from sort of medical to support services. And then I think the only other comment was the comment made on the previous slide about the distinction between senders of the data needing to use labeled document types corresponding to the content, and receivers be able to use them.
For the record, most of these note types, and I think there's more than a couple thousand, have LOIC codes that are specified to be used in both FHIR and I think in CCDA. So it shouldn't be a challenge to take one more data type in, given it just has a different code. But it's worth saying that they have to be able to take them.
The receivers have to be able to take it in.
I think if the receivers can take any note type, they can take all note types. It's just a matter of a different code on it.
Okay.
And I still want to quarrel about the reconciled medications being a separate note. It seems to me that one should specify in the medication item that this one has been reconciled. I mean, Steve, what's your thoughts on it? Because you're going to have too many places to look to find out what they're on and then whether it's been validated, reconciled.
Well, I think both would be valuable. When you're talking about an individual medication and having some, you know, metadata there about, you know, when and if and by whom and in what context it was, you know, reviewed, validated, quote, reconciled. I think the idea of, you know, this is a reconciled medication list, you know, a nurse, doctor, pharmacist, patient, caregiver actually performed a reconciliation on this date and here's the list. I think both of those things have value. I don't know that I would give up one for the other.
But it's the same information in two different places. I can't see that being helpful.
Well, I think they're really different use cases to me. I mean, as a clinician, you know, sometimes you say, gee, you know, is the patient still taking lisinopril? You know, and if there is a way to check on lisinopril, you know, from any system, whether you're asking the payer or the patient or the pharmacy or another provider, you know, and there's a little piece of metadata that says, well, at least as of January 14th, you know, a clinical pharmacist said they were taking lisinopril, you know. But I think that's different than saying, who's got the latest reconciled med list and can you please send it to me?
But you can generate, if you have it attached to the record, you could generate a display to distinguish them. The problem really is too many places is really dangerous. They looked at one list and they thought they were on a drug when they didn't look at, they didn't realize that it said nothing about reconciled or not. Was another, you know, I think that's a
it's sort of a magnet for errors.
Yeah, I hear your point, Clem. I think the problem is that the flip side is what happens now in systems. I mean, we use Epic, and it allows you to say you've reviewed the medication list, has nothing in it about reconciling it. So the fact that you've reviewed it is kind of worthless. It is a different story, but it's part of the same story, I think. Ideally, you'd be able to pull in the reconciled list and stack it up to the one you have.
Well, I think if the records were marked by drone and by date, you could generate whichever kind of list you wanted. And I think ideally there'd be some flags saying this thing was reconciled when you look at your regular medication list. So you don't have to remember to look two places and compare them. That's another reconciliation problem.
So are you suggesting that we don't call out a specific medication list, but we call out instead the data that's needed around each medication?
I would suggest that the date by Holman with the other attributes of the medications in their standard list, and then you could click to see those that are reconciled. That you could do it by date. You do a lot of things. That reconciliation decays, with time.
And then you could build a reconciled list from that, or next iteration, right? So what do you think, guys? Should we put that recommendation in the other bucket and take out?
Well, that's one other. Let's see. The other point is, I for sure wouldn't make it a note, because then it's going to end up in a different part of the record altogether.
Yeah, I think you're making good points, Clem. It's clearly still USCDI. we're talking about medication metadata. So we have to figure out. Presumably, we would put it in with the medication section, which isn't really something we've even been talking about this cycle.
We can throw it in other, and just say, speaking of medications, this is what we want for medication metadata. Really, you'd like provenance of your medications.
And just to be clear, Terry, there Epic does have some other functionality around individual medication reconciliation, where a user can say whether they're taking it, when they last took it, add notes, et cetera. So at least that vendor does, other than just sort of having the checkbox that says, yeah, I reviewed the medications, it does go deeper than that.
Yeah, no, I understand. I wasn't being fair to Epic, sorry. Okay. So let's put the medication metadata in other, take out the reconciled med list, for simplicity and clarity. Okay. Great. All right. So now we are into pediatric vital signs. Yay. Okay. We're getting there. And I think there was a good discussion about this particular issue that I think Clem summed up very nicely. Send it if you got it.
Apropos of the meeting, the complaint about there is a real risk if someone, it's not just if you have it, I think if somebody made a decision based on it, you'd like to know what it was when it happened. So it's at least send it when you got it.
Yeah, I'm wondering, it's going to be tough to connect the decision, I think.
No, but if you displayed it, I think you should save it, and then you got to send it. If you displayed it, someone could have made a decision on it.
All right, so that's a little different than, Stephen, what you were saying.
It's a little stronger. I don't disagree violently with what Steve said, but I do think you have to worry about the documentation, because those things aren't always going to be the same. And you'd like to know what he would have seen when something might have happened based on it. This happens a lot. Body weight is a problem, you know, in this context, because sometimes nurses put in ideal, you know, which body weight was it really they put in calculating a medication dosage. But anyway, that may be aside. We got enough to do. I'm not sure we got to.
Yeah, we can drill down on the details of body weight and blood pressure measurements and a whole bunch of things as a round two.
So
if we go to the next slide.
So Terry, this point about the pediatric vital signs and the raw, the underlying data versus the calculated values, I noticed that Dr. McClure, you know, included some commentary about that early on. I didn't have a chance to kind of drill down and follow all the links, but it looks hopefully that can be discussed with public comment, because it looks like some work's been done on some of this by HL7.
Well, yeah, I think what he basically said was that you record as another attribute, another observation, what thing was used to generate it, what was it based on. And it's really a nice comment.
Terry, was your takeaway from our high-tech discussion that people felt comfortable with our proposal?
Yeah, I think the compromise was accepted broadly, and that is if you have it, send it. If you don't have it, don't go out of your way to calculate it, store it, and then send it. And then I think trying to remember who made the comment about I think the whole issue of making a clinical decision based on that information, I think that's a step too complicated for us. So
yeah, I tend to agree that is a problem we're going to have to solve eventually, but probably not this month.
All right. Are you okay with that, Clem?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So largely, you know, we'll cut the pediatric vital signs section down. And I think Arian said, you know, I'm going to get confused if you have length and height. How about if you just make that the same field? No, modify your field.
Yeah, I think they're really just two different labels for the same thing. I agree with Arian. They don't. I mean, I think he took him a while to say it, but he was saying these aren't really two different things, right? You shouldn't have two fields. We just have to, you know, with little babies we lay them down and stretch them out and measure them, and with bigger kids we stand them up. But and it's, you know, it's interesting. I don't know that I've ever seen in my system a notation box that says this was done lying down, this was done standing up. I think it's really the same field.
There are fields for specifying that what the position, body position at the time of vital signs measures. It makes a more difference. It makes difference for weight, for blood pressure too.
Well, you know, I definitely do it for blood pressure. I'm just saying I've never seen it for length height.
No,
but I think it's relevant.
Yeah. Well, it's not part of the field. It's just, you know, the vitals have an additional question, which would apply to all of them that are in that package.
Well, no, because each blood pressure, at least in my system, again, each blood pressure you can specify, was it sitting, standing, lying down, et cetera. And again, I just don't think that's available for length height. Again, I don't think it's a huge deal.
Yeah.
I think it's really just a matter that it could be called either one.
Okay. A little bit more cleanup there, but we'll get to that. Then we're getting to additional recommendations. All right, so I think this slide pretty much with the addition of the compromise, we'll rewrite. Okay. So, keep going. Additional data elements, additional recommendations. Here we go. Nope. Keep going past that. Okay, yep, there we go. Okay, so these are the three things, and I'm sorry I didn't get the high tech to comment. So we're going to comment, all right? So under, if you go ahead two slides, one slide, you had it. So if we take each of these sort of separate, these are the three additional things, and we will add the medication metadata. So in provider demographics, was there anything else we wanted in how we describe provider?
Well, I don't think it's clear whether this is the provider as they exist or this is the provider in connection with the particular care episode.
Hmm.
I mean, I think some of the fields...
I mean, they should be mapped, right? I mean, the care episode, you sort of say who was involved, but then if you, you know, figuratively click on that person, this is the information you should be able to find out about them.
Well, that was kind of my point, except at the meeting, there was the discussion about the role might have to be specific to the...
to the encounter, that's fair. Yeah, right. You know, because role isn't just physician versus nurse practitioner. It's also attending versus consulting versus referring.
Yeah. So, I mean, you get some of that in the specialty training field to kind of know what your broad discipline is. And then I would see the role and the care of the specific. It's almost a condition-specific mapping, you know, what's my role? I'm taking care of the high blood pressure.
Well,
that's a whole other concept. Yeah, like what? Yeah, that I'd never thought about that. Good point, Terry.
Ultimately, you have to map a care plan to the team members and the health concerns, so that you can map to responsibility and outcome.
Well, there's a challenge. You may kill the documentation. This may be even more work for the providers, whereas it just they'll get their NPI in there automatically. So I'm worried about expanding this at this time, making it more elaborate.
Fair enough.
So Terry, when you talk about other demographics and using the term broadly, you know, the other real use case here is in managing referrals. You know, a provider or a clinician is seeing a patient and they want to refer them to somebody else to deal with something. So there's a lot more that goes into that besides just specialty and training. In the discussions that we've had over the years, you know, having, you know, areas of special interest or expertise, you know, within a given specialty or subspecialty, information about what languages are spoken it can be really important when you're referring somebody. And then there's the whole issue about access and, you know, their schedule and where are their openings and those sorts of things. So that clearly goes beyond demographics, but there are probably some pieces in there that could be, you know, included. I mean, I think languages spoken is pretty important for that referral use case.
Interesting. I'm also thinking, you know, the other things that are on the list are often insurances accepted. That's sort of an access issue. Right. Well, I mean,
I think we're getting into some complicated stuff. I don't know that we can figure that out at the end of this process.
All right. So good point, Clem. So where do we want to start? You know, I think we make it clear that the role is for the episode of care, and especially training is sort of.
I would even worry about that because it's an additional burden. We don't have to record all that now. It's kind of inferred usually.
Okay. Well, again, I mean, speaking to my experience with my HR vendor, there are kind of two lists for a patient's care team. There's the overarching kind of static care team list, and then there's a more dynamic sort of who's on the care team for this episode. And, you know, oftentimes those will overlap, but they're going to be different. You know, if someone's in the hospital, you know, there can be, you know, a nurse, there can be a care manager, there can be a discharge planner, there can be a lot of people, you know, whose role is encounter specific as opposed to more kind of persistent at the patient level.
But that's still easy. I mean, that is, all you have to do is put in NPIs, and you have to do that anyway at the visit. I'm more worried about having to adjudicate between whether he was behaving as a blood pressure expert or as a counselor or, you know, all those things by encounter.
That so you want to out?
Well, I think, I don't know. I just wouldn't get into having to be specialized all those attributes by the visit because of the burden and how important, you know, how important is it really? Because you're using, nobody's complaining about that right now.
Yeah. So if we just this list down, it would be the name, contact information, NPI, and probably general area of discipline.
Well, the NPI has that in the database. It includes the name and the address, sometimes more than one, and their specialty and their training.
And I think we've identified that contact information, you know, can be multiple response, right? A lot of people practice in more than one system, more than one location. They have multiple specialties.
So maybe the contact information, that's fine. You put in where you can be contacted.
Right, but I mean, but even direct address, you know, or fax number, right? I mean, this is my direct address at, you know, at Partners, and this is my direct address at, you know, MGH, and they're going to be different, right?
Yeah.
Certainly fax numbers, same sort of thing.
Yeah, I think we're forbidden fax numbers. Down in the U.S.
Kill the fax.
Although, it'll be part of contact information, I'm sure. All right, and then we can drop the expand in the future, the active areas responsibility. You know, I think that's sort of someday when we take on care plans, that will be something we'll want, but not right now. All right. Okay, simpler. Okay, Clem?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, anybody else? Okay. All right, here we go. Stephen, you're on. Standard quality response template.
Okay, that one. Sure. I'm involved in a California statewide HIE discussion initiative that has a lot of payers and providers trying to collaborate together. And clearly there is repeatedly this discussion about the fact that we need to be sharing quality data, that, you know, payers need to send it to providers, providers need to send it to payers. We need to, you know, try to standardize that both in terms of the content payload as well as the various ways in which that data flows, you know, between those stakeholders. So I just, you know, wanted to flag this as something that one of the things that's been proposed actually by Jamie Ferguson from Kaiser in the context of this discussion is trying to do some pilots of CCDA-based transmission of standard quality metric data elements from, I think he proposed from providers to payers, as that's clearly, you know, something that all the payers want, and everyone's trying to skin that cat using, you know, different knives. But I think that we really should, you know, think about this, you know, in a transport agnostic way, you know, both from the fire perspective and the CCDA perspective, to say there needs to be a standard way where you push a button, you know, in one system and it packages up all the standard quality metrics, you know, in a dynamic way, you know, and based on, you know, a dynamic list, which of course is always changing as, you know, CMS, you know, and other folks change their mind about what needs to be included, but that there's a standard about the data level content, and then there's the multiple ways to package it, whether you're sending it V2 or CCDA or FHIR, and there's a common and expected capability of being able to transmit that and receive that and ingest it. That was all I wanted to share.
So it's a yes on that item. So let's break right there for the moment and go to public comment, and hopefully we got some of our folks still on the line. We will step forward.
Thanks, Terry. I know we've had a lot of public comments in the chat feature so far. So, operator, can we please open the public line?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And do we have anyone dialing in at this time?
Yes. Our first public comment comes from Robert McClure with MD Partners. Please proceed.
Hi, folks. So just to kind of give you the full information on what I put in there about a small item on the pediatric, really anybody doesn't have pediatrics, but the idea of being able to share it if you got it. So if you've got a calculated percent, which would be based on weight, height, or whatever against some data set, I spoke with the Loink folks, Swapna and I kind of worked out a process. I don't have confirmation of this, but I suspect there will be a new observation. I put that in the chat, the proposed name for it, where if you were to submit or send a one of the current observations that is a, you know, something like percent you know, growth or percent height weight, you would send that as you could now. But then you would have something called an associated observation, which would be this new observation. That observation would have a set of proposed probably LOINC answers that would enumerate the known set of charts or data sets that are available on CDC site. So you would then say, okay, and then I'm going to be using the CDC girls height weight chart. And that way you'd be able to send the information. You also identify what it's actually a percent based on comparison to what data set. So that, I assume, would be available perhaps even as early as the next release of LOINC.
Sounds like a good idea. You could apply a lot of kind of things. How did you get there, you know?
Right, and if there are other data sets where this sort of thing could be used, it's not tied to something specific, it's a general observation, so we could perhaps find other places where this would be useful.
No, that's great. And thank you so much for slogging away on the chat. Really appreciate your thoughts.
No problem.
Great. Thank you, Dr. McClure. Operator, do we have any other comments in the queue?
There are no other comments at this time.
Okay. I will turn it back over to Terry.
Okay. So, Johnny, let's go back to where we were. So the discussion about a standardized, whatever we're going to call it, query response. It's not, you know, in a sense, it's a document type, I suppose. But it's something different, and it,
in the whole area of quality measurement has not come up for a discussion the way it should. So, any thoughts on how we make this stronger or?
Well, again, I think as we were saying, we need to, or as I was saying, you know, we need to think about the payload. You know, who is going to be responsible for specifying what is the standard data for whether it's a query or a response related to standardized quality metrics? And there are going to be standardized quality metrics, and there are probably going to be some non-standard quality metrics that are relevant, you know, in some specific domain. But somebody, you know, needs to create and maintain that catalog. And then for each of those metrics, you know, there needs to be specification, and we need to know how to package that up and send it via FHIR, and we need to know how to package that up and send it via CCDA, you know, or V2 or whatever is coming in the future. And we need to figure out where, you know, what's the right lever, you know, from a policy standpoint to require that. You know, is that going to be on CMS or ONC or you know, CCD or I mean CDC or somebody else? So I think those are kind of the components we need to think through.
Steve, could you help me? This is something that now is required for some quality metrics. Are you talking about generalizing it to any quality metric or doing it a different way? Because that's part of the spec now, isn't it, for hospitals who pay, you know, all the stuff we've been doing in meaningful use for the last 4 or 5 years?
Right, but what I sense is, and this isn't sort of my area of deep expertise, is that people are doing it all differently. You know, it's like you got to send your quality metrics. The providers have to send them to the payers. The payers have to send them, you know, to CMS or wherever they send them. You know, but some people are doing it with data extracts. Some are doing it with interfaces. Some are, you know, extracting it out of received CCD documents. I think I sense, and again, others may know way better than I do, but I sense that it's kind of all over the map and people are bootstrapping this. And I think the idea is to make this more standardized and more standards-based.
Well, I like that idea. My understanding is that the ones that Medicare requires, people do them that way somehow. I don't know more than that. But they're also, the insurance companies often have different ones, and so there's a different rule. So there's issues about the different rule versus a different way of shipping them, I think is what we're talking about.
And the payload of Clem is different depending on who's asking for it. But you know, Ken, you got HEDIS, you got NQF, you got non-NQF CMS measures. I mean, like, there's lots of different things. But I think we should be able to get to a sort of a standardized payload. You know, and it starts up there with the numerator, denominator, exclusions, and then what you're looking at. You know,
let me see, how far are we from having a standard definition versus a standard everybody doing it the same? So I know they all do it the same, and I don't know, how can we make everyone to do it, use the same rules, the same purpose, right? Just using the same rules and how you ship it, they're not, I mean, you could be using the same rules and it still comes out looking different. But I think we're also, a lot of them are doing different rules, no?
Yeah, and
I think you're right. I mean, I think different systems, payers, et cetera, have evolved. And again, you know, there's a group called the National Quality Forum that I'm sure, you know, could tell us a lot about this. It doesn't sound like any of us is really an expert. But I certainly hear in my organization, you know, we get queries from left, right, and center for, you know, for sending in quality data. And and I know that we have teams that work on that. And that what I've heard from them repeatedly is that, you know, each request is a little different and they want it, you know, using different methodologies. And I think the goal here is to really try to standardize that and then include in USCDI those pieces, you know, so that they should all be interoperable and required.
Yeah, good idea. But is it mostly a matter of hurting the payers and those various cats, or is it a matter of just defining a technical standard?
Probably both.
Yeah,
I think that hooks will turn out to be and CQL will turn out to be pretty good technical. I wish Ken was on the call because he probably knows a lot more about it.
Yeah, and Dr. McClure has got a couple of comments as well in the chat. So, and to answer, no PHI. This usually is all de-identified.
Well, I mean, yes and no. The reporting part of it is de-identified, but there's a whole process and workflow where individual providers and payers, you know, have this dialogue about trying to close care gaps for individual patients, you know, to, you know, optimize the quality of the care and the reporting of the metrics. So I think there's both. There's patient-specific data that relate to the metrics and the care gaps themselves, and then there is, you know, collective data for, you know, a population of patients.
So, Robert, McClure, is QRDA Cat3, I think that's what I thought existed, something like that. It would take care of the shipping. And is it true that it's not met by that now? He asked, are we not that standard? I mean, I understand that everyone may have different rules that get put into that spec, but are we really, no one's using QRDA, right?
So as part of our certification program at ONC, we have testing for electronic health record systems to be able to ingest and produce QRDA files based on the CMS spec released annually. So I put a link to the site there.
Well, it sounds like we want to propose that all quality users use the same thing to ship it, and then there's a separate problem about the quality users to use the same rules that generate and the same rules and same data set that generates the QRDA.
All right, so is this, we're running out of time in 2 minutes, so is this item already in existence with the QRDA, that there is a standardized format and there is a, you know, is that something we can build on rather than propose something new and different?
It sounds like Jan Bender just gave us the link to it.
Yeah, I would say yes, but... yeah.
Dr. McClure, yeah. You know, so maybe, so how to phrase this? I think, again, getting a standardized quality reporting process makes a lot of sense. And maybe we just say we recommend, you know, building on QRDA, expanding it to, you know, multiple.
Well, I would suggest a two-part thing. One is, finding a way to require quality reporting people to use QRDA as the packaging. And then the second thing is trying to find a way they don't all have slight variations on the rules that generate those packages. I know they do.
You know, Terry, you know how in our ISPTF we have brought in subject matter experts to educate us about things? Seems like QRDA is one of those things that USCDI should get educated about.
Yeah. So, and I think it probably will, you know, for the purpose of our transmittal letter, we'll try to wordsmith this and build on what already exists rather than propose something new. For our phase two, as a group, where we're going to do the sort of the advancement process, the data element data class advancement process, this would fit nicely into that, because
you know, then how do we move standards through? How do we move other things? So next week, we're going to go through our transmittal letter, vote on it, hopefully finalize it, and then Steve Posnack's going to give us a heads up about what phase two is going to look like. So that will be...
The QRDA, I think they now for CMS have to conform to it. It might be these other players who aren't reporting to CMS that are the renegades.
Okay. How would you? Do you have any proposed language?
Well, I think we should find a way to encourage all those who look for quality reports to, number one, use QRDA. Make changes that make it possible they can use it. And then secondly is that they would be some central area that would coordinate the variations and rules and try to reduce them so that the hospitals don't have to do it differently for everybody.
Okay.
You know, this sounds a lot like what CMS has baked into their proposed rule. You know, just like they were saying, you know, we use Blue Button to allow patients to download X, Y, and Z. We want all the other payers to do the same thing. You know, CMS said, you know, we use QRDA for standardized quality reporting, and we're going to require, you know, all the other payers that we have any authority over to do the same and encourage the industry to go in that direction. It's very, very similar.
Yeah, that sounds perfect, Steve.
Of course, we're not providing input to CMS at the moment, but we can write something like that into the USCDI recommendations to ONC.
Yeah, ONCO will listen and pass it on. It's not unreasonable. So how are we doing, Terry?
We're done. I think we're okay. We'll get a transmittal letter out for us to review shortly.
Good. Thank you for your hard work.
Thanks, guys. Good session today. Thank you, all the public commenters, and really appreciate the input. So more to come, and then we'll all get together on Monday.
All right.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks. Bye.
Great, thanks.